woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with
well, welcome back to Action Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. He's Mr. Milliver. Also, Mr. Kevin O'Neill. S&P futures up 22. Dow futures up 156. NASDAQ futures up 81. The news today. Well, all kinds of news today. Congress is pissed off at Boeing for 737 MAX failures. Gee, really? Eli Lilly.
A little slow simmer up to getting pissed off.
Yeah, took a while to get that one. We have Bill Gates. We underestimated the value of masks. Bill has no, absolutely no scientific evidence one way or the other on that, I'm sure. But because if you got money, you get to have your opinion on the front page, whether or not it makes any sense or not. We don't know. But anyway, now the Fed is supposed to placate the markets with promise of low rates for years. Now, does anybody think that the Fed's job is to placate markets? I guess it is if you got your money in your 401k or you just
haven't. Clearly, you haven't read the job description.
No, I clearly have not read the job description, and I don't like it when things are, shall we say, askew. Kevin, how's that for a word this time of the morning? And when you. For those that haven't heard me say this recently, the supply and demand for money for currency is exact same thing as a supply and demand for other products. And when you have factors of production, which could be if Kevin's guys are going to build a new warehouse, they're going to need some steel, some concrete, some robots maybe, some people. And oh, by the way, you need the money to do it, right?
Always helps.
Yeah, and a lot of times the people who have the ideas don't necessarily have the money, and the people who have the money maybe have run out of ideas. So the idea is you borrow money from the other person, and there's supposed to be a cost in there as well. And with supply and demand should determine, and the Fed, to a certain extent, should determine that cost, whether it should be 5%, 4%, 8%, and the risk and all those kinds of things. Whenever you reach a point where you're at one of the extremes where that market is not allowed to work, I think it's screwed up. And now we're talking about we want it to be like that another, like, 4 years, Kevin? I mean, how long are we going to go with this? We went from 2007 and 8. We had huge problems in the economy. So the Fed did something temporarily. Here we are 13 years later. And I'm not saying that the pandemic shouldn't cause them to do something like that again, maybe. But the intervening 12 years where the market never got back to normal, I don't get that. Why are we having is it only the 1%ers or some people are controlling the economy where we only want the people who own assets to make money and we don't care about the people who don't want to take risk and who have a savings account? And why, I mean, for them to skew a market like that for really a decade and a half, damn near, I just don't get it, but obviously
well,
I don't get it.
I think you need to break the investors or potential investors into three groups. You have the direct investors who have a lot of money, and certainly they want the market to be robust. Then you get the people who have a lot of fun. fund money for retirement funds, 401ks, et cetera, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And they do okay by the market, such as it is right now. Could do pretty well by the market, such as it is right now.
But they don't do okay. They don't do okay.
But then you get the people who don't have that those kinds of funds, and they would be your savers, and the savers are left out in the cold.
Well, and even the people with the 401k, as time goes by, people are happy with 20 to 30% of their money making 3.5% in a money market, a risk-free rate, or in a government T-bill or something. That's okay. Because that's essentially, when you look at the retirement deal, now, fortunately, if those people put their money in the market recently, of course, if they were in it the fourth quarter of 18, they didn't do so hot. The first part of this year, they didn't do so hot. But the idea was, and these are my clients, basically, are basically blue-collar, regular people that saved up in their 401k, husband and wife working. It sounds like a real lot of money, but it's not. Essentially saved up, say, $1 million, which is basically the number. If you have a decent job and you put some of your money in there and the place gets a bit of a match and you make some money over the years in either the market or interest, the number, I had a string of people, Kevin, that came in, this is, years ago. They'd come in and, there would be 850, $1.2 million, always right around sort of that number. Now, it looks like, God, these people are rich. They're millionaires. Not really. They don't have any pension coming from the company. So the deal was, at worst, you of course, paid for your house because you've been living there for 40 years. So you put that dough in the bank. The bank, even the worst times, paid 3%, 3.5%. So there's $35,000 a year. And, oh, by the way, you're getting Social Security, which is another 22 or so. So you're talking about $57,000 a year, $58,000, $60,000, somewhere in there, risk-free. Now, if you maintained your house, that's enough to throw a roof on it once a decade. It's enough to pay your taxes. It's enough to do all that stuff. And, not in a mansion, but in a regular place. And that was...
In Illinois.
Not in Illinois because the taxes are up so much. But I'm saying that was essentially the deal that was promised people. Mind your P's and Q's. Save up. Put your money in here. By the way, without any kind of risk, you can live and you're not going to be a burden on anybody. Right? Well, that deal is shot. Now, you can say, well, geez, we just started putting money in Amazon like the right day. Yeah, but that's a whole totally different risk profile. And, I don't know why we continue to... we have insurance companies that have all these... hopefully those guys are in some stock and we'll get out in time. They used to buy basically all your stuff from municipal bonds. They'll take a Chicago bond at 5% and tax free or something. They'll take that. They're not going to take it at 1.5 or 2. Why the hell would they do that? What's the risk of this place?
Well, the risk for a city of Chicago bond.
There might be some.
There's a little.
Little? Or Illinois? Or, I don't know about
Illinois. Or Illinois, because when you consider that the guarantee behind it is its ability to tax, and the tax rates are so high that they're already driving people out of the city and out of the state, they don't have the ability to tax.
That's right.
Theoretically they do, but in reality they don't.
Well, you end up with... becomes a zero sum game. You raise it, you don't put any more money.
Right. It's the death spiral that I think there was a Forbes article a long time ago, years back, that the places that the more they tax, the more people leave, the less tax revenue they get.
Well, yeah, and then you see that in everything. You see that in monopolies, right? You see that now going on. I don't want to jump subjects, but you see that in OPEC. You see it in Commonwealth Edison. OPEC's at a point now where if they cut their, used to be, if they cut their output by 10%, the price went up 20. So they were net winners, right, in terms of total revenue?
Mm-hmm.
Well, now that's not happening with those guys. They cut the price 10, and it goes, the price goes up 2, right? They end up as a net loser.
Well, yeah, cause, and if they it, what happens is now their balancing act is to try not to spur too much new drilling in the United States.
Right. Well, that's
and so when they raise prices, they make drilling a more attractive option here, and so they've been trying to walk that tightrope ever since we had the big explosions in North Dakota and Texas and places like that. They've been trying to accomplish that balancing act, and it's been somewhat interesting to watch.
Well, it's I don't think you can do that balancing act. It's like having to learn how to swim but not wanting to get wet, right? You're not going to do that. They can't. If they lower their output and the price goes up, there's 21 countries in the world now that export oil. So, I mean, they're just not getting it. It comes down to just not having the market power is really what it is. So it's like a farmer who says, I'm pissed off the price of corn. I'm not going to grow any corn. So? You know? The price.
Because there's no corn around.
Well, I mean, the price of corn probably
there's no corn anywhere except that
well, if you got a big enough
drive in the Midwest.
Well, if you got a big enough place, the price of corn is going to go from 350 to 350.001 or something. You know, it's not going to be no difference, but it's, you can't even look at it, right? But I was Maddie and I were talking on the way in. It is astounding, and of course, people on TV and other radio shows have an agenda other than just trying to find out what's going on in the world. But it is stunning to me there were two people yesterday, Kevin. One lady I can't stand listening to, but anyway, this is the shortest recession ever. We're already out of it. Can't believe, look at the numbers. Every number is better than expectations. And I'm thinking, where's Mayor Daley? Who are all these expectators, right?
Let's all dance.
Yeah, and I'm like, to me, Kevin, I was mentioning to John Flanagan the other day, I'm worried that without help coming from the government, people that have gone dug into savings and in borrowings to keep their businesses afloat, as this goes on month after month after month, I think it's almost going to become geometric, the amount of places that close up. I hope to God I'm wrong, and we don't get there. But matter of fact, there's a little bit of a piece of good news today out of Lilly. It says some of the drugs that they originally designed for SARS, the antiviral drugs, actually work pretty well on this thing with people that have really bad cases. It keeps them out of the hospital. So there's some effect, which I guess...
So that's a good thing. Did you saw the University of Pittsburgh news yesterday, too?
I did not. What was that?
They... I want to say it right, and I'm sure I can find the article and tweet it, but they believe they've isolated the T cell and what makes it respond in so many cases to the virus.
So the people who don't get it, why they're not getting it? Essentially.
Yeah. So we know they don't get it. We know it's a T cell reaction. But that's, I keep making this delineation between information and, or data information and knowledge. So, as it relates to that T-cell reaction, we're we have the information, we just don't have the full understanding of what's behind it. And, it needs all the peer reviews and everything that they...
what do they think it was?
All that stuff goes through, but it looks like a... At least at a blush, it's a very significant breakthrough.
But I mean, what do they say?
And it might be a significant breakthrough for all kinds of viruses, not just this one.
But what do they think? Where do they think it came from? Did they say?
I couldn't tell you off the top of my head.
Because that's the. I'm going to go out on a limb and make it just a man on the street guess. I'm going to say it's one of the colds that are. There's like three or four colds. That are not regular colds, they're COVID colds. I'm going to say it's one of those that came through an area not that long ago, and if you caught that, you probably still have it.
Yeah, that would make sense.
But nobody knows. I mean, like Carl said, it's incredibly expensive to try and do tests for T cells to see if you have them, right? I guess it's possible.
Yeah, and so you're not going to do that on a mass basis.
No.
Especially if you're not quite sure what you're trying to find.
Well, plus, if you find it, you just know you got it. You don't know where it came from. So you're not getting anywhere, right?
When someone gets exposed, you just say, good, and doesn't react, you say, good for you, and move on.
Well, I was not one to spread rumors, but this is a small... I don't know if I mentioned this to you before, Kevin. My significant other, Audrey, had his nasty cold / flu. I can never tell the difference between two of them, but she was pretty sick in, I'm going to say, at least 2 weeks in February. It was the shortness of breath, the same stuff that was this thing. And evidently, the southwest side was particularly hard hit. And, matter of fact, my chiropractor, of course, sees a bazillion people. The guy who was on the ad, he does a very good job, by the way. He was telling me the last time I saw him that thing went through his place. Everybody had it. He had it. His whole family had it. So everybody was sick as a dog for 2 weeks. But now he's a little bit compromised. He's got some diabetes. So they actually did the test on him. Said it was not a flu. It was not the flu that was going around. Absolutely was not. And it was labeled an unknown virus. Frank Fahey and his wife both had it. And he said... But now none of those people have antibodies.
Frank's probably the guy who gave it to the whole Southwest.
Absolutely. I wouldn't be a bit surprised.
That guy's a troublemaker.
Oh, absolutely. Now he's telling me he's going to wear a mask forever now. I'm like,
his prerogative. I'm cool with that. It's his choice.
Maybe, but he'll look like he, can you go into a, there's going to be a time when you can't wear one because it screws up all the cameras we've got, right?
There's all kinds of implications like that. Yeah. Yes, you can't identify anyone now. So we've spent all this time investing in security, and now it's useless.
Well, they have one of these currency exchanges here in Van Buren. You can't wear a hoodie, a hat, or sunglasses. A mask is okay.
Why not?
Yeah, why not? Anyway, he said now one of those people that he knows of, because none of them have the immunity. The antigens for the COVID, but now one of those people has caught the COVID that he knows of. So he's saying that's his very unscientific. He thinks whatever the hell that was, it gave everybody some sort of an immunity to this thing. So even though you had your miserable 2 weeks, it wasn't totally worthless for you. So there.
I'd rather get that than COVID, I think.
Well, I don't know. Everybody had it was pretty sick.
Depends. If you had it for 2 weeks and it was nasty, it might be the same thing.
Could be almost.
It was just here early.
Well, but it's
hard to say. Yeah. But when you start seeing that, that's the kind of thing that that we should want to pursue.
Well, I think that somewhere along the line, I go to the health club and there's four people there, and the people that are in the place are racing afterward to clean every sink that anybody might have used. God's sake, there's four people there. How many sinks can you use? And every machine, everything, our buddy, Dr. Johnson, I talked to him the other day. He said the cleaning protocols in Vermont, where the hell he is, in New Hampshire, Vermont, or I've forgotten which one, are so crazy that, he doesn't open up his office. He says they want you to do like a full cleaning every hour, even though a patient walks in and sits down basically on the sofa with a mask on. It's almost like the governor owns a cleaning service. And as time has gone by...
Don't be surprised.
Yeah, don't be surprised. As time has gone by, the Center for Disease Control constantly is putting out... The one thing they have said is that we were crazy early on, or we were too aggressive early on, and how much you can catch this thing from. There were people who were putting their UPS packages in the garage for 4 days before they were opening the darn things, right?
I know people who were washing groceries when they got home. You'd set up a station in your kitchen and say, this is the untouched groceries, and here's how I go about washing them all down, and then I put them on this side, and then at the end I have all clean on one side, and then I have to sanitize the, where I set the bags. And I'm sitting there going, if that's how I got to live my life, then let me get sick, and if it kills me, it kills me. That would be my preference.
Oh, absolutely. I don't, as we keep going, I mean, down here, I mean, again, I got the view of the Chicago view. Kevin, it's I'm not going to say it's not a little better. It's a little better. A few more people on the train, that kind of thing. But it's, you know, we're now in September. Well, we'll come back in October. No, make that November. No, make that December. I don't see how we the economy comes back from that. I don't see how we don't at some point just collapse from the debt and everything. And I just don't want to see that, for God's sake.
That's the way I felt about it when we first locked down.
Yeah.
You know, my first reaction to that is, oh, we're so screwed. This is going to take forever to recover from it. And that's when we thought it was only going to be a few weeks.
Well, but I think, Lord Kevin, people can. I've heard in the last 2 days, two or three restaurant kind of places, or that they were, you know, I would say that a lot of people I talked to are in those industries, but they made it through the whole part where you couldn't be open at all. Basically went through their savings. Said, okay, well, if we open by September, we can still be okay. So they open up to, like, you know, 25% capacity. They don't even get that. And a month or two later, they're saying, I'm losing more money now than when I was closed. And they gave up. I mean, we're kind of reaching the edge in this, I think, in a lot of places. I mean, airlines, how many, unless the government keeps blowing money, how many more months can you lose? How many more days can you lose? How many million dollars a day? Nobody's that big. Even Boeing. I mean, for God's sake.
And this all cascades through, too. That's the problem is that, you know, what happens when a restaurant closes? Well, you know, maybe one of the large chains will pick up some of the slack and hire some of the employees, but they aren't going to hire them all. So then your next step is that you have people out of work, not paying rent, not paying mortgage. Well, you know, if a lot of people aren't paying their mortgage, that can be a problem for some of the banks. If a lot of people aren't paying rent, then some landlords start to stop paying their debt service on their properties. And, you know, we saw this happen in the catalyst back in, what was it, 2007, 2008. It was 2008 was when the fuel prices ran up and started causing all kinds of businesses to cut back. And when the businesses cut back, then they started laying off employees. And that whole thing, you know, that was just, it was a tinderbox, just, you know, let's just say it was a forest with a lot of wood laying around waiting for someone to throw the match. And off we went. And I think we're in a position for that to happen again, and that's kind of scary.
Well, I'm just trying to wonder what the mentality is. I mean, again, those of us that are dying to get us to write up our 7 to 10 points of how to save the world, we're working on it. I was talking to the lady at the club last night who runs it, and we were just talking about politicians in general. And I said, you know, the difference between the people we have now running the place, and it's not just my job to criticize everybody, but I don't think that they are capable of following things through, Kevin. And one of the guys was telling me, I don't need somebody in the state that gets appointed to a job because they couldn't be a regular doctor, but they happen to have their degree. Now they're telling everybody else what to do. I mean, it's probably a little harsh, but it's probably not all that wrong either. I mean, when Jay goes to sleep at night, do they have the ramifications? Again, this is my education I'm talking about, but the University of Chicago and at Notre Dame, constantly the drive for somebody in higher education was, if we do this, what happens? Follow it through all the way down to the whole homeless person. Who gets affected how? I don't know if these people, did they never learn that kind of stuff? I mean, I was talking to a guy, and I won't tell the name of the restaurant, the other day, and his buddy owns this breakfast lunch place out in Orland. Standalone place, nice building, and they got a big parking lot, so they're not part of a mall or anything like that, so they're not leasing, they own it. Well, the guy says their taxes are 80 grand a year. That's a real number. And so they've been closed, they were closed for what, how long? And now they got a tent outside that they can put 10 tables in or something, or 20 tables. So they're doing, I mean, does Pritzker expect to get that check? I mean, where's it going to come from?
Well, Tom, critical thinking is in short supply.
Right, but I mean, how do you, I mean, when they do their budget, do they look at the property taxes for next year and do they say, those checks will all come in? I mean, do they really think that? I mean,
why should the state be any different than half of the businesses in the world that when they do their budget, you know, they budget, I'm going to budget a revenue increase of 5%. Okay.
Yeah.
That's called a wish. Now, how you're going to do it might be something else, but you know, without the plan, that's just it's a wish, and you see that all the time. So yeah, I don't know why Pritzker would be any different than half of the world.
I mean, at least the mayor of Orland, because Audrey kind of knows all of them too, but he's been very aggressive. He's saying, hey, take the park. We'll park on the street if we have to. Take the parking lot, put a tent up, let's get something going. He at least realizes he's not getting the check if there's no business. I mean, right? and he's monitoring the situation, saying, these places have been closed, there's no money there. I mean, the PPP helped a while, because I think some of the people were able to pay their taxes there. But now that's over and done with, right? And
Pelosi said they won't leave until they have a new deal. Congress will stay in session, so...
But I don't think anybody's
talking... I don't know if that's good or if that's just show.
But that was for... That was till the end of June, right? It's now friggin' September. July, yep. August, September. I mean,
on the other hand, and I don't know how it relates specifically to PPP, but we did not spend, you know, all of that bill. There's still a lot of unspent money.
I think all the part that was going to individuals got spent.
I'm sure it did. But the point being that, of course, we need to spend more because we haven't spent everything else we allocated already. Because you know sooner or later it's all going to get spent.
Well, Kevin, actually, even in this country, it's hard to give away $3 trillion.
I saw Brewster's millions. I get it.
S&P futures up 14 now. We were up 20, now we're up 14. NASDAQ futures up 19. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now, right here.
Hello and welcome back to Science and Jax. I'm Tom Howley, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Mr. Kevin O'Neill coming through us from, by the way, I was looking at all the different parts of Michigan. Pretty interesting group you have up there, Kevin. Just saying.
Always.
Yes, S&P futures.
Michigan's like, at least four and possibly five different states.
I didn't realize that the part of north of Detroit is known as the Thumb, Matty. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Well, that's interesting. Anyway, NASDAQ futures up 20. Today or tomorrow, December becomes the front step. So, we'll be trading the December future instead of the September. I think tomorrow is the rollover. But I don't know for sure by tomorrow. Anyway, Dow futures up 104. The, DAX up 2, call that flat. FTSE down 10. 0.1%, CAC around down 1, call that flat. So no trade to speak of today over in Europe. Nikkei up 20, call that flat. Shanghai down 11, that's 0.3%. Hang Seng down 7, call that flat. So let's just say it's a dead market day around the rest of the world. We might change that, who knows. Just in terms of review, yesterday the Dow was up 2, S&P was up 17, and NASDAQ was up 133. So we continued our rally yesterday, but not quite as vibrant as the day before. 10-year, 0.67. Again, it's actually down a basis point. Bund, minus 0.49. That's down a basis point. Japan is staying above ground by just a skosh, a positive 0.01. Oil, which is taking a hit, has actually got a pretty good rally this morning, back 85 cents to 39.13, trying to make a move back towards 40. Brent, 41.39. It's up 86 cents. Natural gas, 2.35. RBOB, back to 115, it was down to 110 the other day. We got gold up $7, 1973. We have silver up 3 cents to 27.50. Copper at 305, still above $3. Manny, what do you got for us? We also have a Fed meeting today, so the conference would be a news conference this afternoon. I'll check on that on the time. What do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a pretty good start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. The only issue we're seeing right now is, looks like it's on the tri-state on the south side. My screen just kind of flinched here. Let me pull it back up. There we go. A semi-fire is affecting the three right lanes of the tri-state, I-294 at I-80 on the southbound side just before Halstead. It's blocking the three right lanes due to that semi-fire with crews on the scene. This has been going on for a while. So that's affecting 80 and 294 down south, so keep that in mind. But everything else looking good. If you're coming in on the Dan Ryan, I-57 or the Bishop Ford, Stevenson is all quiet. Same for the Eisenhower. Edens and Kennedy are looking good, too. Off the expressways, we have an issue out in the western suburbs. Butterfield Road between Lambert Road and Park Boulevard is closed due to an accident. Butterfield, of course, a busy street out in the western suburbs. And then just southeast of there, 63rd Street at Main, there is a crash. Weather today, it's going to be a beautiful day here in Chicago. We'll have mostly sunny skies, a high of 82 degrees. Right now it's overcast and 62 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 108 today. Right now it's clear and 77. In sports, the Cubs and White Sox are rolling right now. Both teams in first place. White Sox have now won 6 in a row as they took care of the Twins 6-2 last night down on the south side. Sox have won 6 in a row, 9 out of 10, and now have a 3-game lead on second place Minnesota. And the White Sox have about, looks like 12 games left to play on that schedule, so their magic number is shrinking. Cubs' magic number is shrinking as well. They came from behind a couple of times to beat the Indians last night on a walk-off hit-by-pitch in the bottom of the ninth. Cameron Maben was hit by a pitch with the bases loaded. Cubs win 6-5 after blowing a 5-3 lead in the ninth. And so the Cubs are now nine games above 500. They've won three in a row and have a five-game lead on St. Louis and a five-and-a-half-game lead on Cincinnati. With Cubs just have 11 games left on their schedule. So they're looking great, too. Diamondbacks are out of it. They beat the Angels last night 9-8. Big Ten football chief, a lot of rumors swirling around that it's going to come back in mid-October based on a vote that a secret, top secret vote that took place this week. So we'll learn more about
double
that
double secret. Double.
And
secret.
Lastly, this is an interesting note. We don't talk a lot about the NBA because the Bulls are so bad, but there was a Game 7 last night in the Western Conference semifinals. Of course, the Denver Nuggets came back and beat the Clippers 104-89 to advance to the Western Conference Finals. They're the first team in American sports history to come back from three games to one down twice in the same playoffs. They did it in the first round against Utah, came back and won three in a row to win that series in Game 7, and then they did the same thing in the semifinals against the Clippers. So now their reward is they get to take on LeBron James and the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals. I wonder if the new Bulls executive who built that Nuggets team is cheering for them, or if he's sad to not be there.
The Clippers are supposed to be real good, right?
Yeah, they were one of the top three favorites to win it all, and they're out.
Oot. Well, that's anyway.
Hey, if I've done the math right, the Cubs' magic number is 10, and the White Sox is 9 for winning the division.
That sounds right. Yep, that sounds about right.
Are either St. Louis or Cincinnati makes the playoffs? Are they going to be the worst team in the playoffs?
Well, Cincinnati is actually starting to play really well. They've won four in a row, and they had the talent, and they just hadn't really played well the first month of the season. I think they would actually be a scary team, even though record-wise right now they're 24-26. But if they sneak in and you know are right around 500, I wouldn't want to play them if I was one of the top teams. The Cardinals, they're just playing too many games, and they're starting to fall apart a little bit. They got beat 18-3 last night by Milwaukee.
Well, their pitchers, if we'd have been there, they'd have had his pitch.
Yeah. But they're almost all the way caught back, caught up. The Cardinals have now played 43 games, whereas the Cubs have played 49. So after stopping for 16 days or whatever it was, the Cardinals are almost all the way caught up in games. Six back.
Yeah, they have two today, I believe.
Yep.
Fed Chairman Powell's news conference is 1:30 our time. The announcement would be 1 o'clock. So if anybody's planning on listening to that.
Speaking of teams being bad, Chief, Joe Maddon goes to the Angels. They have Mike Trout, the best player in the game, one of the best players of all time already. They add Rendon, who was basically the MVP last year and who won the World Series with the Nationals. And everyone thought, they had, obviously they had bring in Joe Maddon, and they are 20-29 and not making the playoffs, even in an eight-team American League playoff.
So it's every first and second team, correct? And then how many
wild cards? And then two wild cards.
One in each. Well, it's not really leagues anymore.
No, they still have leagues. Right. So it's the first and second place team in each of the three divisions in each league. So that's six teams in the American League, six teams in the National League, and then two wild cards in each league to make eight in each league.
Well, it's hard to figure how good this. Well, I think the Sox and the Cubs are actually pretty good. It's hard to figure how many games have they played against Kansas City and Pittsburgh. I mean, the difference in your region of the country and the teams you play is dramatic here.
That's true.
Well, it is in that they don't have to play the Dodgers. The Sox have the best record in the American League, so maybe we should be saying that a lot of the teams in the East and the West don't have to play them.
Yeah.
They don't have to play the Marlins, they don't have to play the Yankees.
But they have to play the Twins and the Indians a lot, and the Twins and the Indians are two of the better teams in the American League as well.
All right, well.
Yeah, and that's where I was going to go with it. Everybody has their bad teams that they have that they get to play. I don't think that diminishes anything that's going on with them, or for that matter, the Cubs.
The Cubs
are just still frustrating to watch.
Oh yeah,
they do so many things that that drive me crazy. And by the same token, the White Sox I am finding to be a real joy to watch because I like the way they play. Now do the Cubs have better defensive talent? Probably. Do the White Sox ever, chase bad pitches out of the strike zone? Sure, everybody does because the pitchers get paid, to make people do that. So they have their own abilities. But boy, they're just a much more disciplined bunch than the Cubs, and that makes them a little bit more fun for me to watch. I get mad at bad baseball even when it's the other team.
Well, the Cubs, for how many years now, they have as soon as it gets to September, guys expand their strike zone and try and hit home runs. And I mean, they look. I think it's really hard to watch. I mean, the Sox have how many more hits do the Sox get per week? Their batting average has got to be 50 points higher, isn't it, Manny?
It's definitely higher. I'd have to look and see what the team batting average looks like.
But I mean, you're talking about, you know, there's they go to a string where they have 10, 11, 12 strikeouts a game. It's like watching a little league. When I used to pitch, everybody struck out. No, but there was one year in Little League, Kevin, if I either struck him out or walked him, one or the other. Nobody hit, or I hit them. Nobody hit the ball. It was a.
you were like Cleveland's pitcher last night. That guy came in with, I think it was first and third in the ninth, and right away he puts one straight at Contreras's head, and Contreras got out of the way of it. Then a couple pitches later, he hit Contreras, loaded the bases, and then the Cubs brought Maben in to pinch hit, and the first pitch he hit Maben.
And it wasn't one of those
fine job, fella.
Well, so did he plunk him, or did Maben stick the padded elbow out in front of the ball?
No, he hit him. It was totally wild. It was not nothing close. You know, same thing on Contreras. He didn't stick his hand in the way. It hit him in the hand. And the first one was, like, right at his head.
Is there any chance that some umpire is going to have the balls one of these days to say, you're not getting first base, you stuck your padded elbow right in front of the thing?
It happens every once in a while.
I've never seen it.
By the way, you were pretty close in your batting average guess. The White Sox are second in all of baseball, batting .275 as a team. The Cubs are 24th in all of baseball, batting .229 as a team. Then you look at OPS, which I think is a more important stat. The White Sox are 4th in all of baseball, .811 OPS. The Cubs are, let's see here, 19th in all of baseball at .730. So the Cubs bats as a team just haven't been very good this year, whereas the White Sox have been really good.
It's much more entertaining to see a hit than a walk.
I agree, but they're both important.
True.
And doubles and triples. Yeah,
and I get that strikeouts
are
a big, you know, are more are part of the trade-off in the way the game's played now and the way hitters approach. But I'm still of the mind that if you put your bat on the ball, you're way better off. You know, one you might hit into a double play instead of striking out once in a while. But by and large, if you put the ball in play, better things are going to happen.
I completely agree. The strikeouts are getting insane, and a lot of it has to do with approach. A lot of it has to do with everyone throws really, really hard and throws for very limited amount of innings, and I think it's just really hard to hit right now. So it's a combination of both, but it sucks watching your team.
Well, yeah, one of the—I may have mentioned this on the show last week, but I saw Frank, they were interviewing Frank Thomas, and it was regarding Luis Robert, and his learning curve. But what Thomas was saying is, you just can't swing at sliders unless you have two strikes. Major league pitchers' sliders now are so nasty, and they get so many people to chase, is that you have to recognize it coming out of his hand. And he said, Robert will learn to do that, and you know not to swing at it unless you have two strikes, and then you may have to spoil one off. But if you think you're going to make a living hitting major league pitchers' sliders, you're not. You're wrong. And a lot of those pitches, you know, what's really aggravating, it's one thing to see a guy get fooled, but what's really aggravating is when, you know, when I watch someone like Javier Baez chase a slider out of the zone that never was in the first place. Not only is it a slider that's going to dive away from you, but it wasn't a strike before it started to break.
I wonder when what you just mentioned, when you said you can pick up the spin, or Ernie Banks said that, I remember him being interviewed, he said he would pick up the spin roughly 3 or 4 feet after the ball left the pitcher's hand. I don't know that everybody can do that.
I was just going to say the same thing. I don't know that, maybe it's easy for Frank Thomas because he was a Hall of Famer and had a great eye. But
Frank Thomas. Yeah.
Right. I don't think a lot of guys can recognize the spin out of the hand. And there was a game, and you may have seen this too, Kevin, last week, where when Javi was really in a funk, and Javi hit a home run last night. He's playing a little better of late, but he was really in a funk. And he swings at slider in the dirt, strike one. Swings at slider in the dirt, strike two. And then you could see he told himself, I am not swinging at this slider. I don't care. And the pitcher threw a fastball right down the middle, and he took it for strike three. And it's like
part of that is, you know, they're getting themselves tied up in knots thinking about it.
Right.
And overthinking it. And that's a problem. But, you know, I think your approach really, whatever you will or won't swing at and what you'll protect, you can't go up there dialed up to hit it out of the park every time. Sometimes you got to think, you know, I'm putting my bat on the ball. I'm not trying to hit it onto Waveland Avenue. And, in fact, if you know, when you take that huge swing, you don't get any more runs for hitting it in Waveland Avenue versus the basket. So, you know, put the ball in play, use the whole field. Javier Baez is an example. He's at his best when he's hitting the ball all over the field. But when you go up there dialed up to hit it out of the park, that's when you get fooled. And because you're cranking up your swing so early, and you just have to pull it back a little bit and keep the ball in play and, you know, help your team, especially someone like him, because he's such a good base runner. I mean, the play last night where they threw the ball in the center field when he was stealing second, he got up and scored.
Yeah, he's an exceptional base runner. I don't have a problem with the guys taking the big cut on. You got two swings, and now it's strike. You got two strikes on you. Now you got to touch the ball. I mean, I think you just got to change your approach on two strikes.
Yeah, Rizzo does that, and you know, I think part of that too is you need to think of your strike zone as very, very tiny on the first pitch when you don't have any strikes on you. I mean, my strike zone isn't the strike zone. My strike zone would be this little spot right in the middle.
Yeah.
And I'm not swinging at anything else. Now, if I get fooled by a pitch that looks like it's going to be in that spot in the middle, I might be able to still hit it and handle it. But when I get behind in the count, of course I have to expand it out to being the whole strike zone. But why would you swing at a pitch on, you know, in the low outside corner of the strike zone, or that you think is going to be in the low outside corner of the strike zone, when you don't have to?
Kevin,
I think, again, that's part of the, you know, I'm going up there dialed up to just crank it out of here, and so I really don't give the pitch a good look.
Kevin, I'm gonna change your subjects here a little bit because we have some time. I know I'm going to go over this more with Russell, but I want to get your everyman's opinion. And the markets right now, I've been mentioning now for a few days because I've been studying a lot of these, I'll say, stocks that look like they're too expensive, but it's not for me to say. Although when I think some places start getting 10, 11 times sales, it better be one hell of a company. You know, very few can handle that type of pricing. But the pricing, the implied volatility, okay, well, I won't say the VIX, but this is when you got to be careful. I mean, yesterday we had a couple questions where people wanted me to get a little more specific and more market timing, especially with the crazy market rent, so I will do that. You got to be careful. You can't look at the VIX and say, the VIX is here, so I'm doing this. I'll just give you a real stupid example. If IBM is 150 and an eighth bid, I'll go back to the eighths, 150 and 3/8 offered, last trade 150 and a quarter. What's the price of IBM, Kevin?
I was told there'd be no math. What's the price of IBM?
Well, the last trade was a quarter. It's eighth bid and at 3/8 offered.
It's the last accepted bid, isn't it?
No, it's wherever you can buy it or you can sell it. So it's not the same. The quarter is just is history. If I want to sell it, I got to sell it at eighth. If I want to buy it, I got to pay it at 3/8. I might be able to put a quarter bid and get it in the middle, but still. But so when you look at the VIX, it's not one number. It's what you're buying and what you're selling, and that's why you should either have a system or a broker. Of course, nobody wants a broker now; everybody's too smart. But you should or a broker that has a machine that tells you what these implied volatilities are. The VIX could be 30, and you might have just bought a put that's a 50. So the VIX didn't do you any good. You just paid an implied volatility, which is fine. But at least know that the VIX is just a statistic. It's all it is, okay, for you actually making a trade. So what I'm seeing, Kevin, is after November 3rd, I won't say the day the president's selected, because who the hell knows this year, but the volatilities are sneaking up pretty heavy. And it affects what I do for my clients, because if you're a retail person and you want to be covered on an option, you have to own an option further out than the one you're short. So in other words, if I just sold an option, it's naked. If I sold, you know, the 150 call somewhere. But if I bought the 150 calls in, say, November, I'm covered for the one I sold this week. All right, so I do a lot of calendar spreads for my people, especially in earnings situations and so forth. Because then, you know, if you're okay with it, you might actually be bullish or bearish depending on the strike you pick. And if you're right, you can start rolling the next week, and maybe you can actually get to a point where you paid very little for your long. Okay, that's if it works out right. If, operative word being if. But right now, I'm looking at these prices on some of this stuff, and after November, everything is to the moon, Alice. I mean, it's crazy, Kevin. What handicap would you put? It's almost like people are pricing in a civil war, for God's sake, in some of these places. I mean, I got, looking here at Tesla. Stock's 439 after the split. Now, it's down $9 this morning, so it's trading right now in the pre-market, 439. Guess where the January 175 puts are? Now, we're talking, you know, what is that? It'd be down 70% or more. They're like 550. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, that's absolutely crazy. And yet in October, in December, they're $4. But now if you drop back into October, they're like 60 cents. You know, which I mean, so I'm thinking the implied volatility is going to the moon in December, January, and probably November, but it's not as big of a month, after the election. And how would you handicap them? I mean, I guess you would think it might sneak up.
I wouldn't have a clue.
I mean, but I mean, these are not financial questions. I'm saying, right? These are legitimate questions for what do we think the world's going to look like on December 1st, and how do we price it? I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen anything quite like this. I mean, Obama, not him personally, but this kind of started in his, and I don't know why it did, but, you know, as much as Clinton was not liked by the right, you didn't have Newt Gingrich say, My only goal is to make sure the guy doesn't get his second term or something, like, was it McConnell? One of the stooges said that. Well, you know, even if you think that, so every time there was a midterm election, it always was on the Obama watch that the volatility, the implied volatility, the price of insurance started to go up the further out you went, which is totally a phenomenon that I've never seen. Usually it's the same or actually the less, because you would think that I'd much rather, insure Tesla like a year from now than I would this week, you know, type of thing, because of the way
what are some of those out factors that are there? Well, you know, we're seeing all one is we don't know what virus status is going to be or vaccine or any of those other things, but we also I don't have a really good feel for what kind of normalcy we will or will not be experiencing by the end of the year. A lot of it seems contrived to me, but I don't know what to expect out of that. Then on top of that, you have all this social stuff going on that is, you know, in fact, a fair amount of it is just co-opting of the Black Lives Matter message to just have, you know, basically upending the status quo. You have a lot of socialist, Marxist, you know, type of people, and they're pretty, you know, I'm not just throwing that out there as the old man in the rocking chair. These are people who are pretty upfront about who they are and what they expect to accomplish. So you have that going on. Don't know what the status of that's going to be after the election or by the end of the year. You know, the one bright spot in the whole thing is actually international. Although we still don't know what's going to happen with the U.S. and China relationships. But on the other hand, the Middle East has been nothing but good news this week. You know, you saw the, I don't know if you saw the signing yesterday with Bahrain. You know, Chad, another Muslim company that's going to open an embassy in Jerusalem. The Emirates just did a deal. This is all in the last few weeks. And, you know, believe me, there is nothing that Bahrain would do unless the Saudis signed off on it. So, you know, there's that glimmer of hope. And then the Saudis are allowing flights over their airspace with the Israeli airline going into Bahrain now. So, you know, these are things that are just, you know, that are really positive. And there's so much, there's such a mixed bag of positive and negative. I don't know what to tell you is going to happen by the end of the year. It's just weird. And what bet would you be putting on that?
Yeah, I don't know, Kevin. I got to stop reading, because the more I'm reading, the more I'm getting almost shaky, nervous about this, because this is starting to be an absolute replay in my mind of the 20s. And I hope it doesn't extend into the 30s, where the 20s were really, to me, like the last 10 years, where everybody was gaga over the market and over the alleged economy, and a lot of people had a lot of money, yet an amazing amount of the population was left behind and never got out, and they were in a depression already in the 20s, agriculture and a lot of other areas. And all of a sudden you had the stock market fiasco, and then all of a sudden you get the depression. And I really wonder if all of a sudden the stock market were to drop by 60%, where that would leave us. And I had a discussion with some of my softball guys on Sunday, and it's always interesting when you know, they're saying, well, you're not going to like vote for Biden, or right? Like, well, I haven't really decided, but I'll probably vote for the Libertarian if I even know who the guy was. But anyway,
he's a she.
Oh, he's a she? Well, then I don't know.
And Joe Jorgensen is a she.
All right. Well, that's okay.
I'd love to see her get in the debates. You know, it's funny. You have to do well in the polls to get in the debates.
Yeah.
But the polls that they use to qualify for the debates aren't even asking about Jorgensen. They just say, who are you voting for? You know, how are you doing, Biden or Trump? And they aren't even asking. So she is institutionally excluded from getting on there. And whether you like or dislike the Libertarian platform or her platform or anything else, if you've ever seen her speak, she's really smart, really quick on her feet, and would probably be a real challenge for both of those candidates that would, I think, be you know, worth seeing. It would inform us more on the other two candidates. But she's being excluded. So
Kevin,
that ain't going
to
happen.
We're going to break. Hey, Matty, if Kevin wants to, I'd like to keep him on a few minutes with Russell, because we want to talk about our education plank and our Save the Word thing. We're thinking of having both those guys for at least 5 minutes, if that's all right with you.
Yeah, I can hang out.
Let's go to break. I can talk about more with this with Russell. S&P futures up 17. We were up as high as 22, then we're down to 14, now we're at 17. NASDAQ futures up 32. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of HomeSource Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate this summer, could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates, and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right
now. There's something happening here.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. So Kevin O'Neill is still with us. We have Mr. Russell Rhodes as well on the phone. Where the hell's my coffee?
Man, I don't have to come downtown anymore.
Why?
Why? Because they hooked me up with a full virtual setup at home.
How does that get us our coffee?
It doesn't.
Yes,
I've been.
Also, what's your full virtual setup at home?
To get into everything that I need to get into at Loyola.
Oh, okay. So you have a VPN connection now.
Yeah, I couldn't get to my Bloomberg unless I went down there and they hooked me up. But for full disclosure, before we get going, I've given money to Joe Jorgensen. I check the porch 3 times a day because I'm waiting for my front yard sign to show up. And I do think this is a chance for us to get a third party out in front of people because the other two choices are so bad. And I always avoid politics.
Yeah.
I'm one of the, you know, they referred to as the silent majority back in the 70s. If I'd been in my age then, that's who I would have been.
Well,
parties are such bad. Just we need a third party.
It's got to be getting obvious to a lot of people.
And I'm not saying you've got to necessarily agree with, you know, the whole hands-off libertarian thing, but yeah, we need a viable third party that falls between the two, and I think the libertarians do.
Off
my soapbox, and we'll talk about the education plank.
Well,
but you're right though that the libertarians have the small government conservative perspective that ought to appeal to a lot of conservatives, and at the same time, they have the social agenda that ought to appeal to a lot of liberals.
Oh yeah, no, I've got
because they're very hands off on individual liberties.
I've got a rainbow colored porcupine up on my bulletin board right now. That's their animal.
Oh, okay. That's their. But we've talked a little bit actually, both of you dudes. When you talk about I got all this crazy stuff from the right. The deep state this and the deep state that. Then I actually got some stuff from the left yesterday about who's running the other side. And I tell you what, I don't see how you could possibly not believe that that is all a possibility, that the two Jamokes, maybe not so much Trump, but he can't accomplish anything, that whoever's running the place are not the two people we're voting for. And if you watch the Kanye West fiasco, and I'm not saying he's the best at it, and I'm not saying I'm a fan, but the fact the guy spent 6 months and he's on like 3 states, anybody who doesn't have a problem with that, I think should take a look in the mirror. And what was the ruling in Arizona, Kevin? A judge ruled him off the ballot because he didn't want people getting confused on the ballot? What the hell's that all about?
What is that about? Though it's funny you talk about who's really running the thing. Kamala Harris had her slip up over the weekend where she referred to the Harris administration with Biden as the president was, I think, her wording on it.
I think this whole Obama.
Oh my God, no.
This Valerie Jordan
Joe
Obama.
Joe needs a food tester.
Yeah. Hey. So the upshot of having you and Kevin on at the same time, not because you both can gang up on me, but one of the things I was going to write about is people telling me every week, hey, Chief, where the hell is your 10 points to save the world? One of the points I was going to start with was the education. And Kevin and I were talking last night, and he says, well, probably the strong part of my game is, since I was at the Chicago Public Schools as a janitor, is trying to figure out how we could maybe use the schools in the city for maybe more adult education, all those kinds of things. And he said, well, why don't you let me handle the more the vocational junior college kind of stuff, and Russell can talk about the higher education. That way, basically got people that are somewhat experts at all three levels. And I said, hey, that's not a bad idea. So Kevin suggested that you and he be on today for a little bit, and we'll kind of go down that road. Because I know, Russell, you got some good ideas of, you know, where higher education maybe is too expensive, maybe it's too this, and how we could sort of fix that. And Kevin obviously is doing the same thing at the, let's say, the level above high school. So, I mean, it seems like we've got quite a team to put something together here.
We did. We're
actually integrating with high school, as far as I'm concerned, is part of what I want to do. But go ahead, Russell.
Oh, I was just going to say, just something that a couple of years post high school that's very practitioner. In the higher ed thing, we'd say practitioner oriented. It has a bad sound to it, but vocationally oriented. And I'll give you an example. There's a really large bank in Chicago that does an awful lot of accounting for different investment funds. They basically have a huge space with a lot of people just out of college that have accounting degrees, and they basically do fund accounting. The turnover is ridiculous because they're hiring people right out of college. Those people get their CPAs, and then they move up. I think there would be a certain group of folks that can't afford to go through the full college, but could be trained on things like that, that would be pretty happy to do a job like that and make a decent living for the rest of their lives. And so I think that there's like a kind of a interesting middle niche that could be fixed if we train people properly to fall in there.
Look at it, and the way I word it, and I think we're saying very much the same thing, is that we are looking at some really good middle-class jobs that pay well. And we at least in public discussion, have a habit of ignoring that. That doesn't seem aspirational. But what happens then is that if we don't develop education pathways for that, then what we are left with is you get the very educated people who are thinking that they're all going to make six-figure salaries all their lives, and then you get the other people who aren't prepared to do much other than retail, or when you start looking at manufacturing and warehousing, those are the jobs that are at risk to automation. And we're already seeing that even at a place like McDonald's. Every time they remodel a store, there's a whole lot of self-service kiosks that comes into play. So, I think we need to look at education more lifelong. Think, on-ramp, off-ramp for what you do. And so, we can prepare people, and I know I kind of live in this world doing it this way. I prepare people who either come to community college out of high school or even reach into high school and do a lot of their coursework for credit, both college and high school, so that when they graduate, I can leave them prepared to go to work. And not just go to work at age 18, but to be on a pretty fast track to becoming a supervisor maybe by 21, which is pretty, you start out with some good salaries, but then on top of it, then you start getting your promotions. At that point, you're not in debt. You've had the chance to sock away a lot of money, and then if you want to come back to school at that point, you have that option. You know, that's something that you can do and continue on, because now you want to get into management, or you want to get into you want to be a plant manager, you want to be a VP of operations becomes your aspiration, and you see that you have it in you, then you can come back and get back on the highway and continue. By the same token, if you want, you still have the option of going right from high school into your college curriculum and continuing your education in the more traditional sense. Mm-hmm. And you can, you know, you can also start stacking multiple skills. So, for instance, if you finish high school with my supply chain management certificate, there is nothing stopping you from saying, now I'm going to go to college, but I'm going to study a technology field. And the combination, you know, those kinds of combinations are really powerful, because now you get IT people, maybe trained in cybersecurity or software development or something like that, who also understand the business, you know, soup to nuts. And, you know, to me, you know, that's where I live. Russell, you're in a little bit different world because you're in the more traditional four-year college. And so I'll let you now, you know, I'll shut up and let you run a little bit with what you want to do, what you would like to see change over the course of the more traditional curriculum.
Well, really, it's just focusing on the skills that you got to have when you get out there. And not necessarily offering it at the traditional four-year level, but you know, finding the two-year schools, and we actually have a two-year school, Arup College, that's part of Loyola, that allows you to, if you want to move up to Loyola after taking courses there. But I think the two-year schools are the place there. I think they're a little bit less intimidating if you hadn't been thinking about college, just as far as a kind of a bridge. But, you know, making sure that everything that you take in that situation is not, you know, it's not, you know, pre-Civil War U.S. history, you know, which is a perfectly good thing to study for somebody that wants to have a well-rounded liberal arts part of their education. But there are people that just don't need to pay the money that would be paid to take that to get the degree that they need to do more things. And I think the tag vocational, it makes it sound more like, you know, the people that you put back in shop back in the day, which always had a bad, you know, just had a, I'm really trying not to have somebody go nuts on me on Twitter this morning, and watch my words.
Or the ladies, but the ladies.
Yeah, you know what? I just tend to, you know, when I get to that.
Well, no,
that
I'm just, I'm really, I'm trying to be very,
stuff,
very.
I just block them.
Yeah, so. I'd be much more on if I had driven down this morning and had coffee already.
See, now you could be even worse if you were to said those girls should be in home ec.
No, well, I took home ec. It's how you met the girls.
Ah, wow.
I went to an all, right, boy, right, I went to an, yeah, all boys school. But
one other thing to mention, I think, and Russell, you just spoke to it and started down this path. Is you know, I talk to business people all the time, and when I ask the question, mm-hmm. what is it that you need, you know, me and my school to produce, you know, what skills do you need, the first thing they always say, and this is almost 100% true, is, can you get me someone who will show up on time every single day?
Oh, yeah.
So,
no,
so I, that becomes, and we laugh, of course, you know, everybody laughs at that and says, yeah, that's, you know, that's important, okay, yeah, we got to do that. But then when we really, you know, drill into it, on top of that, we start having the conversation that says, well, you know what, I need people who can do some research, solve some problems, mm-hmm. are pretty good critical thinkers. I need people who can work in teams, who can handle diversity, and not just racial diversity. There's like four generations, you know, in every workplace. So age, mm-hmm. Diversity, gender, economic backgrounds, all of those things come into play. So, you know, that whole teaming thing is incredibly important, and they need leaders. They're starved for leaders. You get mm-hmm. all of these, you get people who get promoted into their first leadership position, which in manufacturing warehousing is usually a team lead. And the way it works is I look at you, Russell, and I say, you know, you do really good work, and you don't seem to piss anybody off. How would you like to be a team lead? And you look at me and you say, how much more do I get paid? And I tell you, and you say, okay, I'm in. But at that point, do you really have the foundations to fill a leadership role? And the answer is not necessarily. So will you adapt pretty quickly and figure it out? You might. But that's kind of hit and miss. So what happens when you get 4 months or 6 months down the road and that aspect of the job isn't going well? Well, I'm either going to bust you back to your old job, which is very demotivating and doesn't work out well usually, or I'm going to walk you out the door and fire you. I put you in that role because you're a really good worker, and now I'm walking you out the door. That whole leadership aspect is really important, too. And, in fact, on Friday I'll be at one of the companies here in Michiana and talking to them about doing some leadership development for all of their team leads, and there's like 80 of them.
Okay.
So, it's trying to get people to think in terms of, one, do I see myself as a leader? Because a lot of people don't, so you have to convince people to see themselves differently. And then two is you need them to learn some skills to be leaders that they will do intentionally every single time. And when you do that, then you've really, you've done a favor for the local economy by creating some leaders because they're starving for them.
Yeah.
When you have crappy leaders, then you have people leaving their jobs.
By the way, just so you guys know, neither one of your schools is in the top five universities.
Good.
My school is the number one undergraduate business program in Chicago.
The five top schools are all in Boston. They don't care
much.
I know
they are.
Just saying.
You're going. No, they're not. Princeton was one.
Well, that's close enough. The Boston.
Okay. That's kind of like the people in New York saying, asking me how quickly I can drive from Chicago to Denver.
That's a ways.
That's 300 miles, right?
Yeah. All right, Kevin. So. Thank you very much for hanging in, bud. We'll talk to you on Friday. I'm going to talk volatility with Russell here a little bit.
He is a volatile guy.
Yes, he is. Thank you. Russell, when we do the education piece, and here's my concern. I always want to actually I don't push back on Kevin much, but because I pretty much agree with everything he says on this stuff because he knows what he's talking about. But
yeah.
But I don't want to forfeit. When everybody says, well, you really don't need to be, taking a history or an economics course, with the price that people are charging for these places. Well, I think the price is the problem, but I've come from a family where maybe people were a little odd because my uncles couldn't wait to get out of high school at age 16, right? None of them graduated. Yet, if you were to talk to any of those guys and you mentioned like a Shakespeare play or something that written by a Greek guy, chances are they read it, right? So the fact that they weren't in high school and had to go get a job back in those days didn't mean that they didn't know where a library was. I mean, you could talk to them about economics, talk to them about other stuff, and there's a thirst for knowledge. I mean, my mom, she died when she was 82 or something. I'm going to say when she was 79, she's still taking night courses at St. Xavier for the adult people. She took a course a quarter. I mean, there's a thirst here. And I sense that when you talk to some people, matter of fact, my softball guys, these are bright guys, or insurance guys, or cops, or firemen, they're not idiots. And they sit down and you can't be voting for the Democrats because we don't want to be socialists. And I said, first of all, I don't want to be a socialist, but think for a second on what they're seeing with our system here and what they're seeing that's wrong. And how would you define our system? And I said, well, it's capitalist. I said, no, it's not. I mean, it's not anything like competitive in just about every area. I mean, I really do. I know Russell, probably anybody other than me, you probably read more about the 20s and 30s. This reminds me so much of the 20s where half the place is in a depression, and the other half is telling everybody else how good it is. And all of a sudden, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden, we had the, you know, the crash of 29, and we pile into the depression, which I don't think. I mean, if you go back and listen to those times, there's people all over the place that were questioning our system here. I mean, it wasn't exactly doing too hot, you know. So for you to say, God, this capitalist competitive thing in 1933 was going gangbusters, no, it wasn't. The only thing that bailed us out of it was a war, which equalized everything. Now, now, I don't think we want to have another war to do that again. What do you think, just out of the blue, if there wouldn't have been World War II, how do you think we would have limped out of the Depression, or would we have?
Oh, I think we would have ended up being, we would be very much of a socialist-type country now. Because the things that were making things a little bit better were actually associated with, basically associated with government programs.
Yeah, but
which did a lot and kept a lot of people going when it needed to, but that dependence just would have increased.
But nothing,
and I think
socialist.
Another thing that happened after World War II is you had a bunch of guys that went over, did a lot of stuff and came back, and I don't think they really wanted to be told what to do much anymore.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
I think they're like, look, I paid my price. You don't get to tell me. So, they were that silent majority for a long time.
Yeah,
like,
I would
you're
agree.
Not going to tell me how to, you're not going to tell me what doctor I have to go see when I've been seeing the same guy that's been taking care of my family my whole life.
Well,
you know?
To a certain extent, nothing's more socialistic like than being in the Army.
Yeah.
Right.
So.
I mean,
they understood why they had to do that, but it's not the same sort of life and death thing.
We also had a tremendous amount of growth. You also had a tremendous amount of growth that was going on. You had
innovation. That helped as well. But I do think there was a genuine attitude that these guys were all over in Europe and in Asia, and they were fighting on our behalf, and they all had a vision of what they were going to do when they got out of there and got home, and it's probably one of the things that kept them going. And I severely doubt that coming home to a government that tells you how to do everything was what they were fighting for.
Well, that's
you
right.
Know? So,
but I clearly understand it on the economic level. I understand what the people that appear to be sounding socialist are saying. I mean, you look at the tyranny of the Commonwealth Edisons and the people, the tyranny of the people that you regularly deal with. It's either going to be Walmart, it's going to be Amazon, it's going to be Commonwealth Edison, it's going to be one of four airlines, it's one of four market makers in our business, and it used to be 1,000,
yeah.
Right? I mean, whatever we're defining this as an economy, I don't think we need to go, socialist isn't the right way, but this isn't the right way either. I mean,
we're like some weird hybrid.
Yeah, yeah, we are sort of.
we really kind of are some weird hybrid. But all those I think a lot of the countries that we refer to as socialist over in Europe, they're more of a hybrid as well. They're just at a different spot on the hybrid spectrum.
Well, they
you know what I mean.
If
you did a capitalist to socialist spectrum, nobody's on the pure. I mean, maybe Hong Kong at one time was on the pure capitalist side, but nobody's really all the way over there. And there are countries, I think, that are almost all the way over on the socialist side. But you even have, even North Korea has a little bit of a weird black market underground economy going on.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So they may be 98% on the socialist communist side.
Well, I spent like 3 days in Denmark, so I'm not like an expert on the place. I went there for a wedding years ago, but of course, the people we weren't staying at their place, but we were staying at a hotel in town. And of course, I'm up the crack of dawn, so I'm driving around with the old guy in his car. We're going to the store and stuff. Real still sleeping. He had an old Volvo with four cylinder and four on the floor. I bet that thing's still running. I mean, wind down windows. I mean, there was no. It was like the tractor that in Arnie Palmer's commercials. Anyway, but he had an auto repair place, and when he sold it, I mean, it was his life's work, basically. And the capital gains tax was like 90% or something. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, we wouldn't put up with that crap here. I hope. I mean, that to me doesn't get you anywhere. I mean, the idea that you can't ever do something different and distance yourself because, you know, I mean, because some people just like to do more than the next person. And if, you know,
right.
And some people have the talent, some people have the get up and go, whatever you want to call it. And I think you should be rewarded for that innovation. I mean, I never thought you shouldn't. And, but I mean, they get to the point where, you know, everybody goes to, college is paid for all the way through pretty much.
Yeah.
Your taxes are kind of to the moon. Now, I don't know. I think people should pay for stuff. They should pay a fair price. I think the colleges right now are way too expensive. Way too expensive. And, because the overhead is collapsing us in every industry. Because colleges are all that competitive in a lot of ways. They're just like, I mean, you and I could probably walk into Commonwealth Edison and fire half the management team. I think we could probably go to the California schools, colleges. There's 10 independent, 10 overhead people for every teacher. I think you could probably get away with 4.
You can take that. I can tell you, and one of the side effects of what's going on right now, and I'm not talking about my school where I teach because, I think we actually do manage things pretty tight as far as revenues versus what goes out for salaries and whatnot. But I think at the state school level is where you see a lot more waste,
not
necessarily private schools. So there may be some sort of awareness, like I think there might be within industry as well, that you don't need as many people as you did in the past.
Well, I don't
because think... when you're working virtually, people are watching you a little bit closer. Well, depending on who you are, but people are watching you a little bit closer just because a lot of people aren't comfortable with paying somebody that's home all day.
I'm not.
not having an eye on them.
Yeah, but I'm not at all.
There may be a realization that there's a lot of fat to cut at the schools. And beyond that, a lot of the state schools depend on support from the states they're in. Their biggest supporter is going to be looking for ways to cut some, cut funds as well. So that might be a structural change that comes after we solve the pandemic deal.
If we do, S&P futures up 16, NASDAQ futures up 33. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Mr. Russell Rhodes on the phone. No coffee. Mr. Mel Weber on the board. No coffee there either. SP Futures. But when is this Dunkin' Donuts going to start opening again earlier, Manny?
Good question. And not anytime soon.
S&P Futures up 18, NASDAQ Futures up 32, Dow Futures up 141. Actually, the S&Ps are up 13. They dropped during the break here. Oil, well, let's go around the world here. DAX up 4, call that flat. FTSE down 14.2%. CAC around down 5, call that flat. So not an event today in Europe. Nikkei up 20, call that flat. Shanghai down 11.4%. Hang Seng down 7, that's flat. So not much. Again, review of yesterday. Dow was up 2. S&P was up 17. NASDAQ was up 133. Bonds, 0.66. It's all ahead of this Fed announcement today. And we've got the Bund is minus 0.49. Japan, positive 0.01. Oil with a pretty good size rally here, but still nowhere near the 42 bucks it was like a week and a half ago. It's up 84 cents to 39.12, so trying its best to get back up there. Brent up 85 cents, 41.38. Natural gas down 2 cents, 233. RBOB up a penny to 115. Gold just started to move up here. Gold's up 11.90 here, much more than the last time we talked. And silver's up 17 cents, so a little bit of a creep there. Copper is unchanged. We have retail sales rose 0.6% in August. Everybody was expecting 1 and 1.1, so a little bit of a disappointment there. Matty, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still very quiet on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. That earlier crash on the tri-state near Halstead and where I-80 meets, that was involved a semi-fire. That's all clear now, so that was our biggest concern about an hour ago. But that's all clear, so no issues on the tri-state down south anymore, so that's good news. No issues coming in on the Ryan, I-57, or the Bishop Ford. Bit of a slowdown as you approach the circle, but no accidents or stalls. Stevenson looking good, same for the Eisenhower. Northside expressways have been quiet all morning. Out in the burbs, just one crash in the area. That's Butterfield Road is closed between Lambert Road and Park Boulevard due to a crash that happened earlier this morning, a significant crash that has crews out on the scene, and that's out in the western suburbs. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, a beautiful late summer day today. Sunshine with a high of 82. Right now it's clear and 63 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 108 today. Right now it's clear and 78. In sports, White Sox have the best record in the American League, and they now have a 3-game lead on the Twins, beating Minnesota 6-2 last night. Cubs are leading their division now over the Cardinals by 5 games. They beat the Indians in come-from-behind fashion 6-5. It was a walk-off hit-by-pitch against the Indians, so the Cubs keep winning as well. They've now won 3 in a row and 6 out of 10. Diamondbacks beat the Angels 9-8. Big Ten football is rumored to be coming back in about a month, Chief. The week of October 14th is the rumored weekend.
Did we have it spot on, Matty?
We did. And lastly, I mentioned this last hour, the Nuggets became the first team in American sports history to come from behind from down 3 games to 1 in two series in the same playoffs. They did it in the first round against Utah, and they did it again last night, beating the Clippers in Game 7, 104-89, after they trailed 3-1. They won three straight, and now they'll take on LeBron James and the Lakers for a chance to get to the NBA Finals.
Jay? I can't believe that guy Rondo is still playing. The guy's older than me.
Yeah, he's a solid kind of backup point guard, veteran guy that is a pass-first guy, and those guys that can play defense and share the ball and can knock down an open shot if they have to, those guys play forever.
Wasn't he totally washed up on the Bulls 5 years ago?
I mean, he was okay, but yeah, he certainly wasn't as good as when he was with Boston.
Yeah. Russell, shifting gears a little bit, since you're my Vicks guy, my volatility
guy. Uh-huh.
What, I'll stop you talking about your school. What, have you spotted, I know you have, but how much have you looked at the seemingly explosion in volatility after November 3rd? Much, very unusual.
Oh, well, that, and you see it in, because this gets pretty technical, but if you look at the VIX futures contract, today is the first day that October is the front month, which means it's going to be the most actively traded one, and it is way elevated relative to the rest of them, and it has been since really it was listed back in December last year, and that's because the derivatives that trade on VIX settle based on the implied volatility of options a month out in the future. So that October contract is reflecting a price assumption that everybody's going to be on edge in the middle of October relative to the election. So you really see that, and then you see the same. You and I are talking about the exact same thing. I'm just talking about it from how it shows up in the VIX market. I know that it's showing up in the S&P 500 index options that expire right after the election as well. And that's that really is just a function of what happened last time.
Well, I'm,
but I'm telling you, it's not that close. It's really not as close as it was last time. I know the national polls are the same, but if you take out, if you look at the electoral map and you go to Real Clear Politics and you see it with toss-ups, it looks like either guy can win. But if you hit the little button that says, you know, no toss-ups, it's like Biden 355 and Trump's around 180 on the electoral votes. The same map the day before the election 4 years ago had Hillary beaten him by 6 electoral votes. It was really close. This one's not that close, and if people start to realize that it's not that close and start to get an idea of what a Biden presidency is going to look like, I think that all that post-election volatility starts to come down. I hit on like 3 things that, when you just said VIX.
No, well, I was, as usual, but that's your huge area of expertise. I was thinking more of individual stocks that have kind of run up. You look at their your January puts are to the moon. January,
yeah.
December. I mean, I'm looking at it.
Well, I think that is because if Biden wins, and I do think he's going to win. If Biden wins, there's going to be an immediate concern that taxes and capital gains taxes and things like that are going to go up. In order to take some profits in a lower tax environment, you're going to have to do some selling in November and December. That's why I think that the market is looking the way that it's looking.
All right, let's back up a hair. I mean, I know the right is all over this tax crap, and it's they appear to have differences between, you know, where they want to go with the taxes and who they tax and so forth. I mean, I get that. It's not like there's no difference. There is. But the numbers don't lie, Russell. I mean, the federal government has spent, if you get rid of the payroll taxes, is something that just goes straight in one pocket and out the other every month, right, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the other ones, we have basically, I won't say pissed away, I just did say pissed away, 4 years of taxation this year so far. So the idea, and with another plan to come, with somewhere between a trillion and 3 trillion, depending on where it lands, it'll probably be 2, where Trump actually intelligently said, let's just make it two. Why not? I mean, anyway, yeah. So, but now we're talking another $2 trillion is essentially 40% more than all the income tax the government gets in a current year, right? And so we're out another year and a half, say. So whoever lands in that spot, you know, whether it's those, one of those two creatures or whether it's, you know, who knows who, the numbers are not going to lie. There's got to be some money coming from somewhere. My question is, where's the somewhere? Now, obviously, the people who have had option, have had stock and had it run up this far, if they were to sell it here and make a buku bucks in some of these stocks that are 11 times sales, there's money there, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're not going to get it from the guy who's making 36 grand a year. You're not going to get it from the guy who lost his job at a regular place and is now scrambling to get one of the 100,000 jobs at Federal Express delivering packages. There's only so much you can get, as the Irish used to say, there's only so much blood you can get out of a turnip, right? So, I mean, whoever it is, I mean, the people who are, you know, are ready to worship Ronald Reagan's grave because of his tax deduction, the simple fact is, a year later, they had to put through the world's biggest tax increase because they were horrified at what it did to their budget, right? Everybody forgets that part. But what I'm talking about with you is, now, you know, put yourself in my shoes, for instance. I don't do this for people, but, well, I do manage money. But I'm looking at, like, a Tesla here. I have people that love Tesla, that we didn't catch it, and they don't have it, because it ran up so fast. But I'm looking at the January 100 puts are like a buck and a half. The stock's 443.
Yeah, no, there are people looking for a 75% drop in the stock.
Yeah, I mean, and I looked yesterday at some of the ones like the Zoom, and what's the other one, TTD. I mean, these puts are, they're 70% out of the money, and they're trading for like $5. I mean, obviously somebody, I mean, if you had, just technically here, now you say, who's a natural seller there? Well, I'm not going to do anything at a buck and a half, right? Because, I mean, what's the point?
Right.
But say the number was 20. I mean, something totally absurd, and that put was 20 bucks. Well, I could, you know, even if you have an IRA, if you had enough money to buy the stock at 100, you could sell that put because it's called a cash secured put. You're not naked. You're covered by cash. So at some point, I mean, you would think people say, hey, if this guy's going to pay me 10 bucks, which he isn't now, it's a buck and a half, pay me 10 bucks to buy Tesla at $100 in January, I'll do that. I mean, at some point, this insurance, it picks people's eyes up, but right now it's not, Russell. I mean, this stuff is just creepy. There's like no natural insurance sellers in December and January. Now, whether you're picking that up in the VIX and the S&P 500, I don't think you're picking up exactly what I'm seeing here. I mean, you're picking some of it up.
It's showing up in individual stock options, but it's not necessarily showing up in the broad-based index options, because when you get past November and there's a little bit of elevated concern in November, but when you get past that, the implied volatility for the SPX options kind of trails off. I think it's, everybody's focusing on one big event, which is the election, but you and I know, because we're so close to this, there's a lot of other stuff going on. And I did a roundtable last week with three money managers who are heavily involved in the derivative markets, and all three of them said that the election is really not in their top three of concerns right now.
Well, but the time, it's hard though when you...
They're more concerned. One's more concerned. It was resolving COVID, potential inflation, and what was the last?
I think you could take
it was just the COVID, but then it was also corporate profits and valuations of stocks right now.
I would,
but those three things were foremost relative to. The election.
I would take the word
about the election as the average person.
I would take the word potential away from the inflation. It's here, bud.
Yeah.
What do you suppose? And I think that one of the guys who like to say there's no inflation are the same people that invented the receipts from Home Depot and Menards that you can't read after 2 months. Because I'll tell you, if I went back and looked at my receipts from 2 years ago, I'm going to say average stuff at Home Depot has got to be a minimum 10% higher than it was a year ago.
Yeah.
Tell me I'm wrong here, because you're the professor, because this is bugging me big time. Uh-huh. I'm looking at the COVID stuff. You're talking about the COVID part being everybody's an issue, which obviously it should be. I'm looking at the lower and middle places, Russell. I think the worst is yet to come, because the first 3 months got glossed over by the government and savings and maybe easy borrowing for people. And now the government's not there. I think the savings are starting to go a little light, and I don't think these people can borrow to keep a restaurant that's closed afloat. I don't think anybody makes that loan. And I'm almost at a point where if I was in your class, I would ask this question. Hey, professor, I think every month now we go that we're going to start seeing almost a geometric progression in failures. It's not going to be, you know, 50 places went under in March and 75 in April and that kind of thing. I think we're going to reach a point here where all of a sudden we got, you can't even count the amount of people that go out, say, in November, if there's no more government help. Tell me I'm wrong, please.
The direction things are going right now, you're not wrong. But things can change.
Why do I not sense,
you know, I try to continue to be hopeful, because you got to be. You know, if you're not hopeful, you're just, you know, you may as well just give up.
Well,
I'm hopeful that we get back to some normalcy. You know, I've got a kid that's supposed to go away to college in a couple of years, and you know, we're approaching it like everything will be back to normal, and she'll be going off to a school like most people have in the past, you know, 50 years or so. You've just got to believe that.
Well, another thing you need to talk me down on. And even though you didn't on the last one, you agreed with me. That's not supposed to be so good.
Sorry, man.
I'm having a real issue, and Maddie knows this, and he's probably tired of me talking about it. I'm in the car in the morning. This is becoming very, I'm going to use the term class conscious, where I am so tired of listening to some bleep on CNBC saying the numbers are getting better. He's sitting home. He's getting paid. His Amazon's coming to the front door. Doesn't he get that that's not the way the rest of it's not the way the rest of the world is? That 40-50% of the people have never missed a day during this whole mess. The people that are essentially serving him or her, and those people that are actually working are having trouble meeting ends meet because they're the ones getting laid off. I mean, there's a huge disconnect here in what people see. One of the top economists was one of the ladies, I won't mention her name. This is going to be the slowest recession or the quickest recession ever, and we're going to be out of this by the end of the year, and the stocks are here, and this and that. And I'm going, what mirror are you not looking through? There's a huge, basically, I don't really want people getting paid for doing nothing, making decisions about other people. I don't want Jay Pritzker making decisions about nursing homes and the family owns them. You know, is this just me being my south side self, or is there a concern here?
Oh, I think there's most definitely a concern that, you know, the people that are in charge are getting to make decisions for us that we really don't want them to make. You know,
but even universities. This hits too close to home, but even universities, I don't want the guy 70 years old running the place that's afraid of COVID telling other people not to show up that aren't afraid.
Oh, I totally agree on that one.
Don't go too far on that, because I know you're
the fact that I was not allowed to, you know, go into my office and retrieve things for a 6 week period. I felt like that was a little bit of overkill there.
Yeah, but yeah, I don't know how we write the decision making ship, and if we don't write it, I think the economy is in much more danger than most people say. It's basically in a nutshell, that's where I'm coming from here, and I'm hoping I'm wrong.
I think we're going to grab it. I think we're going to grab our. We're going to get out from under the nanny state eventually. And there, the problem is when people push back, you know, they're not being depicted in the most positive light. And I'm not talking about Black Lives Matter and you know, the rioting and things like that. I'm talking about the more conservative people that push back on government telling them what to do. You automatically come across as a you come across like you don't care. You don't care about my grandparent. You don't care about the 70-year-old professor that you work with. No, it's not that. I think we feel like there should be a certain level of personal responsibility, and you know, the government's taking more and more of that away from us.
I have so many people that I've said, well, at some point, people have been doing this forever. This isn't new. It's not like we haven't had a disease before.
You
protect the people that are. I mean, you didn't have the worst cold ever and decide that's the one time you're going to see your grandma that night. I mean, most people. But then every time I say that, somebody will say, you can't count on people to have common sense. You got to tell them what to do. But you know what? Once you go down that road, how do you stop? I mean, everybody who.
Oh, I know. Yeah, no, I know. They keep. I know this is a completely different area, but I was going to Hong Kong every year for 5 or 6 years, and every 52 weeks, I would go at the same time of year. I could see the changes. I talked about it. I'm certain that I talked about it on here.
Yes.
They kept taking an inch. All the, it used to be all the signs were in English. Now there was, you know, Mandarin or Cantonese, and then English was the sub-language. You could just see it going on, and then they ramped it up a little more quickly. I don't think, because of what a free society we are, I don't think that our government would be able to get away with it to the same extent they're able to get away with it.
Well, the people are doing it themselves. I mean, you couldn't chip people. Yeah, people chip themselves by carrying their phone, right?
Yeah,
it's sort of the same thing. But what I mean, it does seem odd to me that with all this stuff going on, the market is almost like it was with these—I won't say dot bombs, but some of these stocks, Russell, they're reaching the same number, like 10, 11 times sales that Cisco and Oracle and those guys made it in 2000. I don't know. I mean, I actually think the Zoom is a very innovative company. 11 times sales.
Especially when you can't imagine that the sales growth is going to ever match what it has this past year.
No, so, I mean,
hey, I want to. We forgot to talk about Joe. I want to talk about Joe real quick.
Go ahead.
Our President Joe. She is sharp as a tack, and I hadn't even thought about what she would do relative to the other two guys if they allowed her to show up in a debate. But I think she would crush them. You and I both, I think a lot of people, if you went out and you did a little survey and you said, do you think the United States needs a third party that can compete with the Democrats and the Republicans? I think you would get a majority of people saying yes right now.
Well, you know, I don't really.
They may say yes, but I don't want them taking people from my side.
Well, I would say when Trump ran, Trump was a defining image of an independent in my mind.
Yeah,
and same thing with
completely disagree with that.
Well, Sanders,
it's a guy that watches Fox News.
When he ran,
yeah,
necessarily what he's done, but
when he ran,
he was pretty socially liberal. He really was.
When he ran, he's a guy that
avoided
watched
those topics.
When he ran, he was a guy that watched Fox News all day, and that's how he's been informed for the last at least 10 years. That's his only source of information.
I didn't say that he
that is not an independent under any circumstance.
I didn't say that he didn't have some conservative tendencies. Okay.
He literally just spews out what he saw on Fox and Friends that morning. Well, that's what he does.
My point is he was not any real part of the Republican Party.
Well, that's true because they hated him too because he insulted all of them.
Right. So
but to say that he was like some independent, centrist or something.
What I said
is
he should have been able to run as an independent. Bernie Sanders should have been able to run as an independent. I mean,
he is an independent.
Oh,
he's actually listed.
Right.
As one.
But I'm saying you can't run unless you jump into one of these parties.
Right, which is stupid.
That's my point. And same thing with Bloomberg. He should be running as a third guy. He has none of the feelings.
Ross Perot did it. Why can't anyone else do it?
It's incredibly. He only got on, 35 states?
I think he got on all the states.
Mm-mm. First person to ever get on all the
remember
states.
I looked this up for Maybe. You not that long ago, and he was in all the states.
You know, but
that's how he got such a high percentage.
First
of
all, I believe you. But
he actually did get on all the states. I went back and looked at these things as well.
All right, so why did I read this article?
The libertarian, it's I think the last time was one of the first times they got on all 50 states as well. It's rare. To agree with both of you, because we're running out of time, it is rare that somebody gets on all of them. Ross Perot had a ton of money.
Yeah.
You know? I remember signing the petition on the lakefront. Illinois ballot.
Mike Bloomberg has a lot of money. Why couldn't he run as an independent?
Well, I think it's totally stacked, the timing and everything. I would bet that from when Ross Perot ran, that every state, because he was able to get on all the ballots, now it's even earlier. You got to get your petitions in and everything.
You think they've changed the rules a little bit?
Yeah, I'll bet we don't have 30 seconds, but I'll bet if Maddie wanted to run, we had our petitions in I'm going to say May. In most states, and I'll bet if Biden or Trump dropped out tomorrow, those parties could replace the name on the ballot a month from now, and they'd still get under.
One closing point, and Russell already kind of said it, but he's right. I love the idea of a third party, and I think everyone does, but I can't vote for a third party this election because I can't deal with Trump for another minute. And I don't like Biden at all, but I'll bite the bullet and just to get Trump out of there, and then I'll seriously consider a third party.
Somehow or other, we got to move to a state that matters our vote, though. It doesn't do any good here.
I know it doesn't.
It doesn't matter here.
It doesn't matter here.
That's one of the reasons I'm okay voting for Joe.
You're right. It doesn't matter here. I'm speaking as the greater we, you know, in the country.
Yeah.
The greater we, not that you have a mouse in your pocket.
The royal we.
Yes, the royal we. Anyway, thank you, Russell. Nice job, man. ESPN futures up 14. ESPN futures up 24. We'll see if we get another day up. We're lower than we were earlier, but we're still up. I'll be back tomorrow on Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.